This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here talking with Dennis Keneally.
Good afternoon, Ian. My name is Dennis Keneally, and I'm the Chief Product Officer for IBM Security, so which means I'm responsible for basically any product within the IBM Security portfolio, which is an extensive portfolio of products.
Last year, IBM announced and has since launched Watson for Cybersecurity. It makes a lot of sense. Use something that can run very fast to understand the complexity of data we have. You started out by giving it to universities to load 1 million documents, but we get more than that every day in terms of hits. How do you add to that, and how do you keep that corpus of knowledge valid?
Great question, Ian, and that's been probably one of the biggest learnings, because when we started out on this journey, as you know, Watson has its lineage back to Jeopardy 2011, and you know, many people ask us what has happened since then. Watson has been used in the medical field, as you know, in medical diagnostics. When we looked at the platform 2 years ago, that was the big question, right? So how do we build a corpus of data? And one of the things when we work with those universities and we worked on selecting the 1 million documents, as we call it, they're the documents that we see a lot of very relevant security content that does see changes, update, and is very relevant to what's going on in the environment. But it's not just about the 1 million documents. So those documents are being updated every 5 to 10 minutes, and we're scanning those for changes every 5 to 10 minutes. Every week, we scan basically the internet as much as we can for security content and looking for new traces or new pieces of unstructured data that says that is relevant to the corpus as we know it, or that is new content that we need to pull into that corpus. So the 1 million is a number we've used that is evolving and changing every week as we look at the entire internet, basically, that we're looking for security content. And Watson knows, based on what we've thought of and based on the vocabulary, which also we have to extend, to be fair. This is an ongoing process of data analysis where we have to extend the vocabulary and actually get to find other documents that are relevant. I've been in the software business for 30 years. This is a whole discipline in itself in the way of understanding data and a data-centric approach in terms of understanding the relevant documents and actually being able to know where to go look and what to find, what is relevant.
One of the challenges with large quantities of data is data cleanliness. We know from some of the other projects Watson's been involved in that the data doesn't change very quickly. Therefore, if it has a set of data that becomes dirty, they're able to unload, clean, reload, and allow Watson to re-establish all of its internal links. The speed with which security changes, there isn't really a lot of time to unload and reload, and more importantly, the new data coming in, we need to avoid false positives. What sort of time have you got that down to, and how are you dealing with that risk of dirty data?
It's again a great question. So first of all, remember, Watson is a cloud service. It's a full online cloud service. We have a lot of control around the corpus ourselves. The platform itself has got much faster in terms of reloading and unloading. We can do that down to minutes right now. But of course, you're absolutely right. We can get into a situation where we get into dirty data and we start to fire false positives. Does that mean when we're actually unloading and reloading, we have to take Watson offline? The answer is no. We can build another corpus on the side and do a hot switchover as the new corpus comes online. That's the beauty of a cloud service. You can afford to do that and you're able to do that, but that's what we do. And we do that all the time, for instance, in our development labs, because we constantly test for false positives. As I said, it's a data-centric view. The first thing you got to do is get the basic code working, get the basic crawlers, get the basic loading the corpus working, which obviously upfront we spend a lot of effort on. As we came towards release and beyond, all the focus has shifted to the integrity of the corpus of data and exactly what you're talking about, checking for false positives, checking for no fires when there should be fires, and making sure that it is accurate. And if we have to change the corpus, that's how we do it. That's how we do it in the development lab, and that's how we do it in production.
What exactly is Watson parsing in terms of the data? It's very easy to look at this and say, oh, well, it'll be log files, it'll be coming from firewalls, from application logs. But of course, all they give us is just a broad insight. They don't disclose command and control servers. It doesn't include all the spam messages. It doesn't include phishing messages. How far into raw data is Watson looking, and how is it interpreting that data to spot a phishing campaign or to spot something that needs to be blocked at a firewall?
Just think about how it works today. The core of Watson, first of all, is the Curator platform, which is sitting in the customer environment. That is collecting all those firewall logs, all those spam port logs, basically looking for indicators, as we call them. We've done that for 20 years within the Curator platform, or any SIM around. around the world that does that today and fires an event or an offense in the case of Curator that actually says we see communication going to an IP address that we deem to be suspicious. That may be an example. Or we may see a behavior that says we see a communication to an IP address which we haven't seen before, what we call a cache miss. I'm just using an example because systems and people are creatures of habit. Systems tend to talk to the same systems every day of the week. When we see anomalies like that, where it is talking to a different system or a different IP address, that's when we trigger and say, this is actually an offense. Now, that might be quite okay. It might be you're doing a backup to a new service or whatever, right? And that may be very valid. Unfortunately, that's what we call a false positive. But when scenarios where it is suspicious and actually I wasn't doing a backup to that IP address, now it becomes something that you have to escalate. This is where Watson takes over. Because everything I've done right now up to this point is very structured. It's very structured communication. Watson takes over. So now we have to start looking and say, where exactly was this person going? And what was that domain? The information that we take from Curator and pass to Watson is typically source, destination, IP address, and maybe a couple of other attributes. And actually, we document clearly for customers what exactly we're sending to Watson. That's available very clearly documented. It's not a lot of information. It's about 10 or 15 pieces of information that we openly share. Then when it passes to Watson in the cloud, it actually takes those indicators and then starts to mine the corpus that Watson has collected. Within that corpus, we have what we call structured information, which is threat feed information that comes from the standard sources that everybody uses in the industry, like VirusTotal. We have built a huge terabytes of that ourselves with our X-Force Exchange and mine that for hits on based on the indicators you've sent us. And then coupled with that, we also start to look at some of the unstructured information, because if you get a hit and say it's going to this domain, and then maybe there's a Twitter feed or a blog or whatever that talks about that domain and some of the behaviors that if there's a hit on that, which is a malicious domain, this is the typical type of set of behaviors you start to build. And see, then based on that, you may then want to go back and mine back on premise again and say, do I see those behaviors? Do I see a command and control maybe beaconing to those servers, or depending on what's in the piece of unstructured data? And it is a back and forth conversation that's going on between Watson and the Curator system, that then this has to build a graph of knowledge, a graph of evidence that actually shows what really is going on. And that's the hard work of a SOC analyst, because you may start initially and say, I see somebody talking to a bad domain in a command and control server, so I'll blacklist that and I'll shut it down. But the reality is the attack campaign could have gone much further and could have infected a lot more systems. And that's what we're actually seeing, because you get into fatigue syndrome, because people are sitting there looking at these things and say, okay, I found it. I have 20 others to deal with in my shift cycle, so I'm going to move on. But then you actually leave behind evidence and actual real infections in the infrastructure. And so what I call fatigue syndrome sets in and people move on and actually don't clean up properly. And that's a real problem. This is where Watson, it exhausts every possibility. It doesn't suffer from fatigue and it doesn't forget to actually go check all these things. And that's where the beauty of the solution is.
Understanding what an attack has done has always been a complicated problem. On one hand, we've got the Ebola patient zero type approach. Where did the infection come? Where is it spread to? We've also got the ability to use graph databases, not necessarily to map an infection, but to map the potentiality of an infection. How are you bringing that together with Watson?
We're using both. We actually have a graph, a very structured graph in there, and it's a combination of that. And actually, we decorate that graph, the unstructured information that comes from Watson as well. So we're actually bringing it together under the covers in all one big graph, then presenting that outcomes with a set of probabilities and based on the knowledge we have within Watson, that's how we are actually doing it. So it is a combination of the two and a bunch of very sophisticated machine learning over that graph that is taking place under the covers within the Watson platform.
One of the challenges companies suffer from is how to educate their users about cybersecurity. The focus has always been very technical, which turns users off and they completely ignore it. If you're using graph databases, one of the options here is to be able to spot a user whose behavior is risky. They may be looking at certain sites that put them at risk. Are you seeing customers taking that data and using that and going back to an end user and saying, look, you've been visiting these sites, they're all perfectly fine sites, however, your risk is increasing because of the type of sites they are, the way that you're using these sites. For example, it might put you at risk of malvertising, it might put you at risk of going to a phishing site by mistake. Are customers getting that sophisticated, or are we just a little bit away from customers doing that type of interpretation?
I think we're a little bit away. Right now, back to the first part of your question about Graph, one of the things actually we put a lot of effort into, as I described Watson, it's quite technical and it's sometimes hard to follow. And how do you actually present that to a security specialist that's sitting in SOC or at his desk or her desk? And we spent a lot of time actually showing the outcomes of Watson, but also we're all engineers, techies in this environment. You want to understand how it arrived at its conclusion. And we actually, with the user interface, we can present that in actually a graph fashion, so you can clearly see where it came from and how it arrived at that conclusion. So we help with that. That's been hugely beneficial, the way we've presented that user interface, and we've got a lot of very positive feedback. Even if it was all just structured data, right, it hadn't used the power of Watson, the way we actually present the data is very useful to individuals. The second part of your question, where you're getting, I suppose, somewhat more proactive, you're looking at users that are bordering on risky behavior that they could get infected. We have a solution for insider threat, which actually starts to look at what we call user-based analytics, which looks at user behavior. It does what it says on the tin, user behavior analytics, or UBA as we shorten it to, looking at that right now. It tends to focus on where you have gone to trouble spots and where there is an actual real live attack or a real live bad domain. We haven't quite got to yet in terms of risk profiling that, but I suppose as we're chatting here, I'm kind of thinking about that and saying that would be a very nice addition. We are putting a lot of emphasis on that again in terms of risky behavior and bad domains, etc. And there is a lot of excitement around that capability in our portfolio. That's in addition to the Curator platform as well. I think we have around 1400 downloads and installs of that capability in our Curator install base, and people are deriving a lot of value because, as you know, 50% of the problems are within the organization. That's where people are either intentionally or unintentionally causing attacks to happen.
One of the challenges for a lot of cybersecurity teams is diversity, be that by gender, be that by race, be that by age. The advantage of a machine learning system is it doesn't have any of those built-in biases that people have. But that data still needs to be interpreted. Have you had the opportunity to look at the difference between how Watson is assessing data as a machine learning, completely bias-free, and how that's improved or changed the reaction of teams?
That's one of the key learnings in terms of everybody wants to come back to a business metric in terms of what you're doing here. And we have some real data right now. We're measuring this a lot more in terms of the productivity of individuals in the operation center. Clearly, Watson is an unemotional machine and it comes with its conclusions. The biases would go back to what we talked about earlier, is the corpus of the data itself. But what we're seeing right now in terms of the real business value. We do these case studies in our own operation center and when we talk to customers, because when you want to set up a security operation center, you have to build a business case, you got to build a plan, you got to understand how big the environment is, how many events are going to happen a day. These are the typical metrics that we put in place. And then at the end of the day, how much compute and how many people you need to run this, because you know you need to plan. And we have standard metrics to do all that. In the operation center, and when you boil that right back, and I mentioned this earlier, typically, we size it that you get about 30 minutes, somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes. I use 15 and 30 because we're not 100% productive all day long. We go for coffee, we do things. But let's assume 30 minutes per incident on average. Now, obviously, if there's a big breach going on, you're going to spend a lot more than 30 minutes. But on average over time, that 30 minutes now has been shortened down to 1 or 2 minutes. Watson today is making a recommendation. The individual has to either take that recommendation and act on it or disagree with it. And that's where, at the end of the day, I call it checking the homework. It's the parent checking the homework. The user is the parent, and they're checking Watson's homework and making sure it's accurate. And they may disagree with it. In that case, then we actually take that feedback and look at the corpus and make sure we retrain it and go back into the issues we talked about. But over time, and we're finding it, the homework is right more and more times. So then you're seeing that productivity really come true. So that's really how we see it and how we measure the business value here. It isn't so much around gender bias or whatever. As I said, it's a machine. It's down to the individual and what the findings of Watson are. And we have real metrics around that.
One of the interesting things over the last 6 months has been the introduction of emotional components for Watson. When we talk about it being an unemotional machine, that doesn't mean to say it can't actually begin to detect some of this. Spam, we don't really care about, but spear phishing. Now that will draw on people's emotions, it will look to target certain groups. Have you started to take advantage of those APIs for Watson and have it parse emails based on emotion? even go to the point of maybe looking at other forms of communication, voice communication or video communication, looking at faces and voice. We know that's being used in other parts of Watson. Is that making its way into Watson for cybersecurity?
That's a good question, especially as we look at user behavior. Now, we're getting into a difficult area, which is the area of user behavior and privacy. The short answer to the question is yes, especially as you start to look at insider threat. It comes down to Watson really doesn't care. It's all about the data. We are looking at things like Twitter feeds and seeing activity on social networks, etc., because that's a very valid set of APIs and a set of data, and tying that back to the user and, again, looking at that. Unfortunately, today we have a lot of what I call in the security world, a lot of rich pickings by just concentrating on the behaviors inside the enterprise, and we can do a lot of detection right there. But I think over time, like everything, as systems become more sophisticated, the accidental attack, I think we can pick up. The real insider threat, masterminded threat, the sophistication level goes up, then things like that really are something that will be beneficial over time and where you get some of the emotional sentiment going on. That's in the research phase right now in terms of it's not in product today, but it's an area, again, that we're looking at, and obviously there's a lot of work. That's the beauty of the platform and the beauty of the investment by IBM. We track that all the time. We track what areas that they are investing in, how we can make that relevant to security, and that's what we do all the time.
You mentioned privacy there, and one of the issues that we know is becoming a problem in Germany and other countries is data sovereignty and privacy, data staying in-house. We're also seeing some very interesting challenges to what is personal identifiable information. For example, last year we saw the ruling that dynamic IP addresses can be considered PII if you then track what somebody does on a website. You're sending a certain degree of data back to Watson so that the corpus can be improved. What conversations are you beginning to have with customers about the issue of privacy, what data can be sent, what data can't be sent, and how that data is handled?
Yeah, that's the classic problem, unfortunately, in this industry. That's why up front we have a data handling guide. We are very explicit about what we're sending. We document it clearly. Customers also will ask you to prove it to me. If I say I'm sending these 10, 15 records of information, then actually give me a transaction log of the actual outbound communication and actually show that that's actually what's happening, and we have those requirements and we're making that available as well to customers. At the end of the day, it's an opt-in scenario. With these systems, unfortunately, we do need some of those pieces of data to actually be able to make headway against what's going on. And without that, we're running blind. All we can do is be very transparent and very open with what information we're sending, and operationally, and it's not just on paper, but operationally show, which we do, that this is in fact what we're sending, not saying one thing and something else is going on. We will provide details of the communication logs and the customer can see that, and that's what the conversations we're having. And that, at the end of the day, so far has been sufficient for concerns from customers. It's an ongoing issue. The real challenge of the industry, right, of the security industry, we want to protect privacy, but at the same time, when you get to things like dynamic IP addresses, we simply have to have those to be actually able to see what's going on in the communication links.
Try as we might, the truth is we're going to get breached at some point. One of the big problems for companies is they don't know what to do at that point in time. Their incident response is often shaky. They don't see it in the same way as they would see disaster recovery. You bought a company called Resilient about 18 months ago, and Resilient's strength was that they had already gone through all, particularly for the US, all the individual state and federal laws, they'd worked out who needed to be informed. They've also expanded that out to other countries. When an incident is detected by Watson, when a breach occurs, what amount of information can you prepare for that customer? For example, sending the legal team a list of places where the company has offices, a list of the documents they need, the text that needs to go in the documents. We're not talking about it being fully automated and sent. Still needs to be some oversight. But where are you with that degree of automation to speed up that critical factor? Because that's what the regulator will look at when it comes to fining somebody.
Yeah, that was the whole driving force behind the Resilient acquisition. And as we talk to customers a lot more, unfortunately, the reality is there's an acceptance that it's going to happen, the breach is going to happen. And how do you protect your brand and how do you actually respond is critical right now. It's not about Resilient. It's also about training organizations and how to respond. An example of that we're investing very heavily, actually, is we launched the X-Force Command Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the U.S. And here, it's about going from the C-level right down to the operations people and understanding the role that everybody needs to play within an organization and understanding what you do, obviously from a regulatory point of view, from a compliance point of view, but also dealing with things like the press in terms of what you need to do when that happens, how you communicate, what you communicate, how frequently you communicate, and just building an awareness in a breach situation. Obviously, that helps the organization to build a response plan, etc. But then in the detail, as you asked, in terms of when a breach happens, there's country dependencies. We're all global companies right now. We have data in many different countries. There's many different regulators involved. And how do you prepare? That's what the resilience system is. At the core of what I call the secret sauce of resilient was they had legal people that actually studied all the legal documents in the various jurisdictions and understands depending on the situation. So how does that all tie together with Watson and Curator, etc.? First of all, Resilient will work with any security operations center technology, be it the competition or ourselves. What it needs to say is, I'm seeing a data breach or an incident, and once it sees that, it lays out the workflow for the remediation plan. And that's what's codified in the platform. Then we'll actually build you those templates and those responses depending on where you are in the world and what exactly is the scenario. That's fully integrated. We integrate with Curator, as I said, we integrate with Splunk and the competition, and we actually go to market and actually do that on top of any security operations center technology.
If we look forward, IBM's focus is all about hybrid technology at the moment. Watson for Cybersecurity is sold as a separate product. If we want people to just see hybrid as a natural extension of their platform, where do we move to actually having Watson for Cybersecurity as just a tick box in terms of self-service rather than a whole separate product as it's currently sold and addressed by customers?
Let's talk about the infrastructure first. Companies today, everybody is moving to the cloud. Obviously, organizations have a huge investment in on-premise applications and technology. What hybrid is a way to start to leverage the innovation and the developer capabilities of the cloud and use a combination of your on-premise technologies and cloud technologies where, you know, you see much farther, much better development productivity. There's a third scenario where people start from scratch and just go cloud native. That's what's happening in our industry. Now, in security, obviously, we have built up a set of practices and a set of policies and a set of technologies to manage security on-premise. As you go to the cloud in those hybrid situations, what we're seeing is an extension of that going on. So basically, you're extending the policies out into the cloud. How that all comes back to Watson. Remember, in first and foremost, we have a way of collecting all that log data and collecting all that information and bringing it together in a security intelligence platform like Curator. So whether you're on-premise or going out to a cloud service, via APIs, we get the same data. We collect all that data. We've built all those probes to actually look at all that data. Obviously, we can get inside the cloud environment to actually look down to a container level, etc. But we can look and see on the edges that customer is responsible for to actually get the information there. Watson is completely independent of that because it's a separate cloud service. So once we send it those, what I call symptoms or critical data elements to Watson, it's completely independent whether you're fully cloud-based, whether you're hybrid or on-premise, and it works seamlessly across all of the above.
Dennis, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ian.